Welcome to today's morning in Masechet Erevin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. And I'd like to once again get a sense of perspective about where it is that we are, so that we can have a better sense of where we're going. But I would like to point out something I think is very important, although I think we'll get gradually a deeper understanding of this. And that is that the understanding of perspective, specifically in Masechet Erevin, is fundamental because of the nature of Erevin. I don't know how to get this across, but maybe it's something that I can't really explain right now, but we don't have time. But I think I can give you a hint that will enable you to work on this. The Masechtas are structured according to their content. They're not all structured the same way, which is why they have such very different personalities. And the way that that happens is because the geometry, so to speak, of a Masechet, which is very, very much part of what Erevin is about, is related to our brain function. In other words, it's a tremendous mistake to think that brain function is essentially a digital experience. Obviously, that's a childish metaphor when you think about it. Brains don't really work digitally. And what you're talking about in terms of your actual experience of your brain is not thinking. It's not working things out the way a computer works things out. And because of that, the main way that our brain allows us to experience things, if we understand it to be an analog experience, not a digital experience, which is obvious from the actual experience, there cannot be such a thing as a digital experience of consciousness. I think that's clear to everybody, right? You can't have an algorithmic consciousness that is broken up into tiny pieces. Consciousness is by definition an experience which is analog, not algorithmic. So it means that you're experiencing the nature of a particular structure of space. When I say space, I don't mean Euclidean space. I'm talking about the kind of space which can exist inside of a brain, where you're talking about levels of complex phase space that are greater than the number of particles in the universe by many, many orders of magnitude. So because of that, the structure of an actual Masechet is the experience of the Masechet. And therefore, when we're talking about particularly these two Masechtas of Shabbos and Erevin, which are spatial Masechtas, and there's one additional Masechet, of course, which is all about space, which is Sukkah, where over there, the Torah actually tells us that the way to understand Ruach HaKodesh, because Socheh means Socheh Ruach HaKodesh, is as a spatial experience. So then that would mean, that's the reason we have all of these interconnections of Sukkah, obviously, not just because it happens to be that they both take models of space from the Mishkan and so on. It's much more than that. Sukkah is obviously, anybody understands, it's this actual experience of the nature of space that is being forced to contemplate. The same thing is true over here in the Rabbanan extensions of the spatial awareness that's given by the dinim of Mavui and Chotzer and the Hekeres that are involved in Mavui and Chotzer. So therefore, in a sense, the real nature of human understanding of Torah is a function of Erevin. And that's the reason that Erevin has all of these issues about how do we paskin, how do midos have to do with how we paskin, how does the way we relate to the world have to do with how we paskin, how is it possible that you become more and more aware of multiple possibilities, and that becomes central to the interrelationship of your psak, so the memtes panim tar, memtes panim tira, and the question of can you be metaira sheretz. It's the multiplicity of possibilities that increases this breadth of your phase space. Because of that, it ultimately increases your actual experience of the Masechet, which is why Masechets are not meant to be, as the Zohar points out, they're not meant to be mechanistic. And the fact that we have to reduce them to mechanical thinking because of the losses that we suffered after the series of mishaps in the Midbar, after Kabbalah Satara, which went from the ego through the problem of Ein Mishpat and the breaking down of the unity of how to see things and turning it into mechanics by hitting the rock, it has completely reduced our ability to experience. Because the way we now work, as the Zohar puts it, is by going back to Mitzrayim, where everything is mechanical. So now you take an, over there, you take a heavy rock, and we make a kal v'chomer. So we take a chomer, which is the chomer and levanim of Mitzrayim and so on. It's literally mechanical work that's done by a brain, as a brain trying to act like a digital computer, or trying to work along simple mathematics and logic, which takes forever, as you know, if you've ever tried to actually put down a very simple, logical, immediately apparent issue in logic symbols. It takes you an hour to write down something which you understood within 1/10 of a second. And that's why understanding, trying to get a sense of Erevin in terms of the way that it affects your brain rather than how you keep working it out is extremely important. And that's why I keep insisting that it bothers me. These pictures, they bother me because of the fact that they don't allow you to loosen up. Your brain is supposed to generate the multiplicity of pictures, not that you're supposed to be sitting there forcing yourself to understand things by going through the steps. So things should become as intuitive as possible. We tried to do this for Yavamas as well in a completely different sense, which was an intuitive grasp of the interrelationships without trying to work them out. And I think over there, everybody experienced how much easier it was to learn Yavamas that way. And that's true for all of the Masechtas. Grasping the space of the Masechet is what it's all about, which, by the way, is the way that Torah changes you. It changes you by changing your brain. It doesn't change you. It doesn't change you by what you learn about it and think about. There's a direct change, not just a philosophical and intellectual change. And that's the big problem, by the way, in science as well. It's a big problem. Where the nature of universities, because of the fact that you have to break things down, have become insular to oneself. There's no experience of the thing because everything is distant. So we call it academic. It's academic because its distance makes no difference to anybody. So the same thing is true over here. You have to be very careful. Do not allow a masechet to become academic. And the more it's reduced to pictures and syllogisms and various steps of understanding X, Y, and Z, you're not allowing your brain to experience the Masechet, and it does not have the type of experiential impact on you, which is the way your brain works. Your brain works through series of experiences, not through series of algorithms. So because of that, let's just try reviewing once again, getting the general space, but not just as an outline in terms of trying to remember, okay, what were the different sugyas, but try to allow it to let your mind expand into what's been happening over here. So again, we started off at the beginning with just the description of this idea of what a petach looks like. And we went through those petachim in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Ulam, in the Heichal, in Pitcham Shemalachim, and we came to see what it is about a petach that distinguishes it from other elements of space. So it's liminal, and liminal is very, very important. At what point does liminality break down? So it's no longer a petach, but it's just a mixing of spaces, which is the opposite of the value of the liminal. That was the entire beginning. Then we got into measurements and the way that the interrelationship of measurements, again, don't think about measurements as inches and centimeters. Measurements are parts of your body. That's what's so important about this. There are measurements that have to do with your pinky, that have to do with your finger, that have to do with your arm, that have to do with your thumb. And the fact that they are different types of measurements that you feel in your brain is very different than measurements that you measure along some type of arbitrary scale. So because of that, the different measurements, the different parts of the Oren, Kalim, Beis HaMikdash, Psachim, and the differences in the Mizbeach itself are things that you have to relate to. It's not just being arbitrarily different kind of things. They're different relationships. And that got us into the different ways that we view measurements when it comes to Shabbos, when it comes to agriculture, and the way in which we measure things in terms of how we feel things are mixed. Fine. That was all the beginning, and it all is interrelated. It's the way that I perceive space, openings, and the measurements of my body against the external universe, and how I relate to it. That's all one piece. Then we went into trying to understand what Amavui is. So, yes, we pretended that it began with the issue of how do you make Amavui higher, how do you make Amavui lower, and that was the interrelationship of the Amavui to the Petach, but that brought us immediately to the idea of the length of Amavui, to a question of what's considered to be Amavui. If it has a hole in the wall, is it still Amavui? Do I still see it as one long thing? And that brought us to different types of Amavuis. The Amavui Sasum, the Amavui Mefulesh, the Amavui Okum, the Amavui that was also Kinadal, all of which was involved in, okay, how are we matir, and how do we seal off those various different types of Amavuis? And that started us with the idea of how do we paskin? That's the first time that we met it. Of course, we met it again later. But how do we paskin in terms of contradictions? So we first brought up the Basco, which we didn't even know about yet exactly how that worked, and the idea of Ksil b'choshech holech, being machmer, being mekel. And then we went into the relationship of the Mavi to the area around it, which is the Mavi that ends in a backyard, Mavi that ends in a front yard, a gateway to Rosh Hashanah that's in front of the Mavi. Okay, then we started talking about the dinim of the Korah, all the various dinim of the Korah. So that's a different issue, of course, entirely, and that's moving on from Mavi. Space, openings. Mavi, shapes. Then we move on to the heter of the Korah of the Mavi. That led to all kinds of issues. The Korah, which is at an angle, the Korah, which is hanging, the Korah, which is sticking out into the Rosh Hashanah, which of course led directly to the difference between inside and outside, which was the question of Nira b'machut, b'bifnim, b'shavim b'bachutz, or vice versa. So this interrelationship of inside, outside, that has to do with Mavui, of where it is that the importance is that we should be aware and that the mechitza or the heker should be created, that was the entire sugya of the Nira Mibiftim Veshava Bipachutz, which was so profound that it involved us in all different issues, not only Nogea, the way we started with Korah, but it ended up being the Mishnah later on about the different Chatzeros, one which opens up into the other. This is Nogea, sugyas all over Shas, including what is a kosher minyan, where do you have to be, how does the Ezra's notion relate to the other side of the shul, and all kinds of things like that where you're davening in a smaller area to the sides. Okay. Then we got into the idea of the Porot Meruba al Ha'omed and Avira Dahai Gisa Vadahai Gisa. Now that is a question of what constitutes for us an actual area that is able to divide between one space and the other. There's different ways that we do that. So the division of spaces, obviously, the simple way is mechitzas, but that led to all types of halacha l'mashmi sinais, which were virtual mechitzas. And so because of that, we got into a long, long understanding about Tzuras HaPesach, and the meaning of a Tzuras HaPesach, and the way to make a Tzuras HaPesach, and the difference of a Tzuras HaPesach vis-a-vis agriculture, like Kilayim, and vis-a-vis Shabbat, and the question of how real a Tzuras HaPesach has to look, fine. Then we got more recently into that closed the sugya of Korah's, the question of how do we see things as being separated, and that moved us into lechis. How exactly do lechis, is there a lechi? Is there lechayayim? Are there more than lechayayim when it comes to chatzeras, which we then started calling pasim? And that led to the different geometries. What's the, forget about the question of diurin, which was one issue. Let's talk about the different geometries of a mavui and a chatzer. What distinguishes them? Once we started talking about that, we got into a certain Talmud. Very strange Mishnah. Certain Talmud said something in front of Rabbi Akiva. That triggered a massive, what appears to be a non sequitur, a massive discussion. It started off with who is that Talmud? So we start talking about Rabbi Meir and about Rabbi Noroi and the differences between us. The first time that we find Rabbi Akiva saying, well, Rabbi Shmuel didn't mean it because it definitely wasn't true, but you know what? The Talmud's a genius. which seems very strange. I mean, how is the Talmud a genius for saying something that isn't true? The Rebbe says, well, he was trying to encourage people to think independently. But then it turns out that that genius Talmud was such a genius Talmud that the multiple possibilities of everything that he said made it impossible for anybody to understand what he was talking about anyway. And because of that, it was a completely different level of brain function and therefore of Torah, and was not part of the world of Piskei Halachas, which led us into coming to understand in the next daf, to coming to understand how does the way in which people relate to the world have to do with Piskei Halachas. It turned out, surprisingly, it has everything to do with Piskei Halachas. We ended up asking, like Beit Hillel, despite the fact that Beit Shammai were smarter and made more sense and were always able to prove themselves right, we always paskin like Beit Hillel, which is weird. But that turns out to be because of the way that they are connected to the world around them. So if we're right that the nature of Torah and the nature of brain function and the nature of a mesechet are fundamentally connected to the way that a person experiences reality and ultimately is mechuber to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, then this makes all the difference in the world. And it would be the reason that it's Erevin specifically that makes us think about the human condition overall, which was, again, a shocking thing because nobody would believe this, that at the bottom of all of the machlokasin of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel lies the question of the human condition. Is it noach lo la'adam livaro to lo livaro? What in the world would that have to do with the business of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel and all of their hundreds of machlokas and they're all stuck in the Shulchan Aruch? The Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about the nature of the human condition, but that's the point. Erevin always talks about the human condition. And in the end, halacha and the way, the shape of your experience is the shape of the human condition. Because of that, all of these supposedly spatial issues are directly issues of experiencing yourself. So that led us to the Memtes Panim and to the question of whether the halacha, Reutzel Asis, Kibet Shammai, Kibet Hillel, and so on and so forth. That took us on the next daf, so now we're already holding on your Dalet. That took us to the next daf, to the idea of rowing. Rowing means that your mind adjusts for the situation. How much do we allow for rowing when it comes to the question of koros? So can we adjust the korah to pretend that it's strong enough had it been of a different material? Can we adjust the korah if it's at an angle? Can we adjust the korah even if it's jutting into a different ritual so we need to mentally cut it off? And things like that. And that was the first aspect of rowing. Then we went on to rowing in terms of lechi as well. And all of that led us directly to geometry of all crazy things and understanding the interrelationship of space and volume, of circles and squares. Took us to the Yom Shel Shlomo, which is a completely different aspect of the Beis HaMikdash itself and happens to have been made by the same gentleman who made the Takana of Erevin in the first place, which is obviously not a coincidence that it's found over here, specifically in terms of Yom Shel Shlomo, that gives us the way in which we can adjust the interrelationship of geometric types of relationships to the world that we experience as an experience. And that's the question of how much can we round off pi. So that gave us a long discussion of the Yom Shel Shlomo. And then we moved on yesterday to the idea of how much of this concept of mechitzas and of hekeras of mechitzas, which is lechi, and accounts for our original mistake of assuming that whatever you think about a lechi is what you think about a mechitza in this issue, how much of it is a function of your relationship to it, and how much of it is a function of your construction of it. So is a mental construct the equivalent of a construct, of a physical construction? You can see how this falls directly, flows directly from everything that we've been discussing in the Masechet over here. It's a fundamental question that touches on the underlying interrelationship of measurements and bodies and mentalities and virtual mechitzas, hekeres, ruach hakodesh, sukkah, tikkun of Erevin, geometric shapes, and so on and so forth. The Masechet is a very powerful unity, and if you can experience it as a unity, you will end up loving it, and it will be part of you. So I suggest, again, keep all of these structures in mind, not as something that you memorize, but as something that you experience and you begin to see it, so you don't have to keep thinking about it all the time. And please remember that a lot of the things that we consider to be fundamentally important in how we learn are not only not fundamentally important, they are in actually fundamentally antithetical to how we should be learning. Because the idea of memorizing, let's say, particular mishnayos or particular halachas that teach us how it is we're supposed to look at Gemara is a very basic compromise that was made. And it was made because of the breakdown in our experience, which is called miut halev, as opposed to brains. And it was a transference of the direct surasa d'shmaitza, which people used to understand because of the way things looked to their brain. It was translating it into digitalized material, so to speak, and logical syllogisms, which then needed to be organized in a particular logical fashion, and which then needed to be memorized, which then needed to be written down, which then needed to be put on computers, and so on and so forth. All of this was a massive, massive compromise that destroyed the way that we relate to Torah. And it was not only a simple compromise, it was an iser gomer. Remember that. It was an iser gomer to make up mishnayos, even if you didn't write them down. It was usher to conceive of mishnayos that were going to be used as ways to teach people that were set in stone in any way. You needed to be gomer gemara, not be gomer mishnayos. So we even call the misayir that was given to you initially as ligmor gemara. It's the things that you learn about life. So in the same way, nobody would attempt to educate their child by giving them a series of mishnayos about how to do things. That wasn't the way to learn Torah either. You learned Torah the way you grew up as an infant. It's just part of the structure of your mind. And so all of these things, the closer that we can get back to the nature of the what it meant to really have a Torah where the Mishmeres HaTorah had to do with spatial issues and not with all kinds of fancy halachic confusion is very, very profoundly important. Anyway, I've had my say, too much of my say, I apologize. And now let's get on that we've done that that review. So let's remember where we were at this point. So we were talking about what happened. The last thing that happened was that we were camping out on the road. And there we were on Shabbos. We want to know how is it that we're going to be able to carry our cholent in our covered wagons. So we started off with the discussion of putting our covered wagons all around each other and putting the clay bakar in between them and the camel parts that were doesn't fit into the American West very well. we were using the karot of the gamal and so on, and that was fine. And that led us to a diuk in the Mishnah, which made it pretty clear. Rav Papa was saying poritz ka'omed is mutter, and Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua was saying osir, and that was again if you don't understand this, then the Gemara sounds just silly. It was a machlokas about what it was that the Torah told Moshe. Now, what is that? What do you mean? Do you know or do you not know? I'm telling you, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe. You know, don't leave most of it uncovered with a wall. No, it was cover most of it with a wall. Where do people come up with such a machlokas? So obviously, again, we're talking about what does it mean to a human being to be in a different space? That's the question. So is it the fact that I am cut off from something else by having a protective barrier? Or is it the fact that I'm not fully exposed to the outside world by having a protective barrier? There's a tremendous difference between them. If the latter, so then the Poritz Ka'omed would be fine. If the former, then obviously HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Moshe, make sure that a separate reshus is defined by cutting yourself off and being goder. Yesterday we spoke about the way that there are two different levels of mechitzas. There are mechitzas that are called mechitza metukenet, and there is a mechitza which is called a mechitza ru'ua. A mechitza ru'ua needs to utilize some of the aspects of the Halacha L'Moshe Mi-Sinai to close itself up. So when we were talking about mechitzot that are either built ru'uot, so that means that they extend in one direction and one direction only. Think about that for a moment. If there's a mechitza that does not have a cross, how do you call that, where you got like a cross-linked fence? So you've got a cross of Shesiva Erev. I forgot how to say that in English.
Crisscross?
Maybe it is cross-linked. I don't know. So if it doesn't cover all of its bases, both horizontally and vertically, so then is it really a mechitza? Think about the way you feel about a mechitza like that. In other words, when you have poles in the ground and there's surrounding things, there's nothing in between the poles. Is that the same thing to you as a mechitza that may be a fence, but it's a fence that's a cross-linked fence? Obviously not. So that difference is the difference between how much we will allow that mechitza to work. And there's another thing that because of that, again, the Chachamim inserted the same halacha about diurim. An area that is not meant for living in is also considered to be second rate cut off from the rest of the world, not first rate. In the same way that there are mechitzas that are first rate mechitzas, second rate mechitzas. The difference between them is always one difference. And that is the shear of Beit Satayim, which was the shear of the Mishkan, the chotzer of the Mishkan, 50 by 100, 5,000 square amot is the area that the Torah gave as a defined space, which is essentially a not meant for living in. So it's the space of the Mishkan. Now, because of that, we're going to get into the differences today of these various mechitzot geruot. And notice that we've only spoken about things that are vertical. How about things that are horizontal and they have holes in them? That's a little different, perhaps, because those things, because of the fact that there's a blockage that runs across the entire area, and we can't view something as being an opening because nothing is open. It's in between that it's open. Is that the same issue? That's not clear, and that's something that we're going to be looking at. But you see how these things directly affect your perception and understanding of your place in space. And that's the important thing to begin to feel in the Masechet. So we're up to the one line up from the bottom on Tedvav Amud Beit, and we're still holding in the middle of the sugya of Parutzka Omeid. According to Rav Papa, Parutzka Omeid, according to Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua, Parutzka Omeid is not useful, and it remains non-enclosed. Okay, so it would be also to use as a mechitza. What we're going to be doing, first of all, is bringing a lot of different examples of things where it seems to be saying that porutz is enough ke'omeid, and other examples where it seems to be saying the difference. And in each one of them, we're going to give excuses as to why it's said this way and not the other way. We already know the main excuse, because the main excuse came from sukkah. The main excuse was that an easy way to measure the porutz ke'omeid is by measuring it by putting in and out the various measurement pieces, which means that it's actually slightly larger because you have to put it in and out. That's a simple excuse. So there's other excuses in terms of the structure of the Mishnah or the Braita, and that's something that shouldn't concern us too much, because basically at the end of the day, we're going to be getting back to our Mishnah, as I said yesterday, and it's quite clear from the Mishnah that it is only necessary, lo yehu pirtzot yeterot ala binyan. The porut should not be more. It says it very, very clearly. And in the end, that's how we paskin, because of this vision. Okay, so now, the question is like this. We've got ourselves a brisa. Shayarasha chanta bebika, v'yikifu bigmalim, ba'akofot, ba'avitin. So how about if we've got we're camping out again for Shabbos. Okay, and there we are. We surrounded the encampment with these various camel cushions, with the actual sacks that we carry things in, with bamboo, with vegetable stalks that we've got. You can carry within that, as long as between one unit and the other, surrounded by camels. So you can't have shaloye ben gamal le gamal kim lo gamal. You can't have the distance between one camel and the next, which is the width of a camel. Or you can't have a distance between one saddle and the next, which is the width of the saddle. And you can't have between one cushion and the next, which is the width of the cushion, whatever it is that you're using. Okay, so notice what it's saying is, you cannot use something where it's the same which is a riot of liberator of the Yoshua, because now it's saying that it's got to be a little bit more camel than non-camel, right? So how are we going to answer that? Does anyone know? When it says that it shouldn't be the same, it means the same to be able to measure it by putting a camel in and out. Well, if you're going to put a camel in and out, it's got to be slightly bigger than a camel. The only one who doesn't know that is your wife when she tries to park the car in parallel parking. Okay, so then you go repair it. But otherwise, you know you've got to have slightly more space in order to get the camel in and out. Okay. So, Hakinami b'nichmas v'yotze. So this doesn't count. Okay, another brisa, fine. So this brisa talks about kilayim. And this is a very fundamental brisa because it puts together all of the issues that are important for us to work out. And these are the issues. Let me explain them to you in advance. One issue is lovud. And remember that lovud is for all intents and purposes closed. It doesn't enter into the Poritz Ka'omed issue, because even if it's just three tiny threads, remember, that are close to each other within three tvachim, the whole area is closed. It's like a solid wall. So this is a force field wall, and that doesn't enter into our question of Poritz Ka'omed at all. Then we have a different question, and which is the Poritz Ka'omed. Then we have a different question. Avira dahaigisa, avira dahaigisa, which can be mavata. So if you've got too much empty space on either side, which is wider than the part that's there, it's mavata the mechitza. Then we have another question, and that is, what is the shiur of an area that is chashiv to be looked at as its own meaningful space? We know that. That's arba'at tefachim, that's always 4x4, is the minimal shear of a rishus. And therefore, if you have a mechitza that is arba'at tefachim, you can already view it as a mechitza, at least where it is, right? The question of whether the whole area is covered by it, that's a function of how close it is to the mechitza next to it. But once you've got 4 tefachim, at least that piece is a mechitza. So the difference between somebody standing on one side of mechitza, maybe in a vineyard, and somebody on the other side planting something that's not allowed to be in a vineyard, that could be determined by just a mechitza when you're on the other side of mechitza of Arba Tov. Now, once you take that into consideration, says the Braita, here's the idea. Nimtzeita Ta'omer, we're right in the middle of the Tosefta here of Kilayin. So Nimtzeita Ta'omer, so you see, it turns out that there are shalosh midot b'mechitza. There's three different levels of mechitza. Let's take issue number one. Issue number one is the question of lovud. And therefore, kol she'u pachot mishlosha, if you start off with pieces of wood, let's say, that are less than 3 tefachim wide, and you want to make a big mechitza out of them, then the only way to make a big mechitza out of that is to make certain that you don't have a space between one and the other, which is shlosha. It cannot be shlosha. It's got to be less than shlosha. But that means that no matter how much less the piece of wood is, the piece of wood could be maybe 1 centimeter wide, as long as it's close enough to the piece next to it, that there's not 3 tvachim, it's all considered to be a sealed unit. And the reason for that is, kedei shelo yizdaker agedib bat rosh. Anything that would be 3 tvachim and up cannot be viewed as a mechitza because it can be penetrated immediately by a small animal. Okay. Next stage. Anything which is already 3 tefachim and up, but only up until 4 tefachim, has a special category. Why? Because over there, for it to be a mechitza, what you need to worry about is to make certain that you don't have a distance between it and the next piece which is as large as it would be, because then you would have the empty space being the equivalent of the whole space. And then if the empty space, which is the parutz, is more than the whole space, now this is a contradiction which we'll get to, if the empty space it turns out to be greater than the whole space, then everything becomes usur. Once it's 4 tefachim and up, and this goes all the way up to 10 amot, then all that you need to make certain of is that between each unit of wall, there should not be as much as there is wall. And that way you avoid having the porous, the empty space, being the equivalent of the whole space. Because if the porous is the equivalent of the whole space, then imaya porutski omeid, then the area which is kineged the omeid is motar, but you don't have a whole mechitza, because the area which is kineged the porutz is asur. On the other hand, if you have the omeid is more than the porutz, then everything becomes sealed, and the whole area is turned off, cut off from the area around it, and even kineged a porutz is mutar. But once it's more than 10 amot, then you've got a different problem, because then you have the area has been busted into areas around it. And it doesn't matter how beautifully it is surrounded, because it's all open. It's been busted through. More than 10 amot, as we've seen all along, is considered to be a pirza and not a petach. Okay, so that means we've got three separate midot. If you have less than three of tvachim, it makes absolutely no difference of whether it's porutz, ka'omed, that's irrelevant. Because since the only thing that I need to worry about is whether it's close enough to the other piece that it is lovud, it turns out that the porutz doesn't exist, because anything that is lovud doesn't have an area that's porutz at all. And therefore, porutz ka'omed is irrelevant to level one, mida rishona. The second mida is different, because over there, the mida shniya, it's very, very important, because since it's more than three, so now there's empty space. Once I have the empty space, that's called avir, empty space. Now I have to worry about, do I have avir on either side of the space that will be mevatel, the standing space? Do I have omed meruba ala porutz or not? So that's completely different. And there, since I don't have a single piece which is four tfachim wide, I don't have a usable wall unless I have an entire wall, you see? So either I have a whole wall or I have no wall, because four doesn't count at all. On the third level, I do definitely have a wall, because four is a wall. Four tfachim is a wall. Now the question is, I have to determine whether I have a whole wall, which would mean that I would be able to use the area where there doesn't appear to be wall there at all, because I have omid meruba ala porutz. That's for the first time where I could consider the fact that there's a difference between the piece of wall and the rest of the wall. These are the three midot. Very straightforward. It clarifies for us the issues that we're talking about. The problem over here is the contradictory implications vis-a-vis porutz meruba ala omid or meruba ala porutz. So therefore, says the Gemara like this. Okay. If you analyze what it says over here, then we've got problems. Because look what it said. Let's first finish up the various other issues that it mentions. Hayu sham kanim adokranim, v'oselahem peah milamala, so then afilu biyoter miyaser muter. If you have a couple of sticks that you stick into the ground, and then you make a little vine on top, like we said before, that's a tzuras ha-pesach. Once you have a tzuras ha-pesach, you can use a tzuras ha-pesach even more than 10 amos. And remember, everybody agreed to that when it came to kelayim, which is what we're talking about over here. The question of whether you can rely on that when it came to Shabbos, that was a machlokas that we had earlier. Fine. But here's what concerns me. Katani miyad. Now, did it not say in the opening level of this discussion, in the ratio, it said from three until four, as long as, listen carefully, as long as shaloye ben zeleze kimilu o, as long as you don't have the same distance of avir as you have of the actual board. But the moment that you would have the same, then you wouldn't be able to carry, or you wouldn't be able to plant there. You don't have a mechitza. So you see that even though it's the same, porutz ka'omeid is usher to you of the Rav Papa. When it says kimilu o, it means using the milu o and taking a piece, sticking it in, taking it out, putting it in, and then leaving it there, and taking another piece and taking it out. So that's nichmas v'yotze. That's telling me if it has slightly larger areas that are porots. But if it would be exactly the same, it would be fine. And by the way, I'm not just saying this to you to get out of the problem. It's obvious that that's the point. Because since it says also here, Imaya Parut Muruba Al HaOmed, isn't that a contradiction? It turns right around and contradicts itself. It's a more open space, then everything's awesome. What is that saying? That if it has the same space, that is mutter. So you see that I'm right. Of course, that's what it means. Hey, as a matter of fact, isn't that a tiyufta of Ravuna Bereder of Yoshua? Because it's saying that if it's the same, that it's good. How does that work out? So what will Ravuna Bereder of Yoshua respond to that? He'll respond by saying, well, why don't you read the next piece, huh? Ema Seifa. It says in the Seifa, if the Omed was more than the Porutz, then everything is a wall. Even Kineged HaPorutz is Motor. What is that telling you? That if it's the same as the Porutz, then it's Usser, okay? So that's saying exactly like I'm saying, man. So the Seifa is against Rav Papa, and the Reisha is against Rav Huna Bereder of Yoshua. So how is each one going to handle the implications that are against their Shita? Okay, so now this is a question of how to understand the Braita. Each of them will obviously explain it according to their own approach. Rav Papa will say, look, the Seifa is not a problem. The Reisha already explained to you the din of Porutz Meruba ala Omed, right? So you already know the essential halacha, that all you got to be careful about is that you don't have more. So because of that, it uses the language loosely in the Seifa, and it says Omed Meruba ala Porutz, not because of its implication. It just says Omed Meruba ala Porutz, even though obviously I don't really need to know that. But since it said before, Shelo Yehei Porutz Ka Omed, as we explained, so then it just says it in order for it to be parallel to the Reisha case. And Rav Huna Bereder of Yeshua says exactly the opposite, that the Reisha is not a problem because since it's said so clearly in the Seifa, the words Omed Meruba ala Porutz, you can't get closer than that. So then it says in the Reisha parts Meruba ala Omed. All right, now we get to something that's a little bit more complex. I understand perfectly well, according to Rav Papa, why I don't just simply mix the level of three with the level of four. Because, I mean, essentially, we've got two completely different dinim, according to Rav Papa. Because according to him, we understand why we can't list the sum of the first section together with some of the second section and put them together. Because according to Rav Papa, if you have a wall that's exactly three tvachim wide, it will be kosher if the area between it is also three tvachim wide, even though it's not lavut. Why? Because it's parutz ka'emet. So I can't include that in section one where it's got to be less than three, right? But according to Rav Huna Bereder of Yoshua, it's going to be the same halacha. If it's exactly three tvachim, okay, isn't it true that exactly three tvachim is going to be exactly the same as less than three tvachim? I mean, albeit for different reasons. When it's less than three tvachim, there the problem is at the moment it gets to three tvachim, you run out of lavut. Okay. Over here, the problem is the moment it gets to three tvachim, you run out of Omed Meruba ala Porutz. Okay, I understand, but at this halachically speaking, it's the same idea. In both cases, whether it's slightly less than three or it's exactly three, it's going to have exactly the same halacha. It cannot be kosher if it's got that amount in between. So why not just mix it? Why not just say till three instead of saying till less than three? So you could have just put them together. You could say anything less than three and three itself. The important thing is make sure you don't have a gap which is as wide as three. Perfect. He says the Gemara, yes, it's perfect. But it's only perfect if only you're coming to teach me halachas, okay? There's more to life than halachas. How about if I'm trying to teach you about how to think about this? Conceptually, the two things have nothing to do with each other. The level one of our discussion had to do with lavud. The level two of our discussion had to do with Porutz Ka'emet. Now, what the? Of course I'm not going to mix those two, for heaven's sakes. So Mishum de lo dami, psula de resh, psula de seifa. We're dealing with different sets over here. What is this? It's mix it because the halacha is the same. It's nonsense. So in terms of the set, all of the issues of the psula d'resha are defined as the psul of something that is three tvachim. We want to talk about it in terms of gedib about rosh. Because remember, according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, gedib about rosh is the important nekuda, even if normally a mechitza could allow lovet up to four. But once it's on a bottom where it can actually be penetrated by a small animal, even he agrees that it's not considered to be a kosher, okay? But the psula in the next section, that are three tefachim wide and more, up to four, over there, the only issue is shelo yeh poretz ka'omed, right? So I'm going to mix those two things. And by the way, I got a little bit of a problem. Now, this is a misapprehension, this problem. This problem is based on the misapprehension that the difference between holding that lovod is defined by three, like the Chachamim hold, or lovod is defined by four, like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel holds, is similar to the idea of something which is four tvachim wide being choshev, which the Gemara thinks, if you hold only four tvachim wide is choshev, then you must hold like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, that four, up to four, is considered to be lovod. Why? Because that space of four isn't choshev. But once you hit a space of four, it is choshev. Mashenkin, according to the Rabbanan who hold a space of three, is considered to be non-lovod. So then it ought to be a space of three that's choshev. Now that's going to lead, obviously, to problems in this discussion over here, for sure. Because then we're going to have a contradiction. But let me ask you something, says the Gemara. Before we continue on with this issue about Poretz Ka'omed, can I just understand something? If first you say less than three, okay, now less than three only goes according to the Rabbanan, because it's the Rabbanan who hold that less than three is lovod, and three is not lovod. But then the second category says anything from three to four, and it says over there that the areas are not considered to be choshev, even though they're more than three. They're batal. How could they be batal if the Rabbanan hold that a board of three is considered to be chashev? So then it shouldn't be chashev. And it's only true according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel that a board of three is chashev because he holds that less than four is lovod. If I'm right that these two concepts are interrelated, because according to the Rabbanan, they should say, I mean, how could it say mishloshev ad arba'ah? According to the Rabbanan, there's no such category as from three to four. There's no difference to them. Once it's three, it's exactly the same as four. No, says Abaya. Look, come on. I mean, if it starts off going according to the Rabbanan, because it's defining the nature of lovod as being three, then we need to assume that the entire thing is going according to the Rabbanan. But it's just that the Rabbanan are made that as far as defining it as a wall that's choshev to allow you to plant vegetables on the other side of a vineyard, it has to have a mokum choshev. And e'ika mokum arba, that's a mokum choshev. If not, it's not choshev. That's not the same thing as the question of what is considered to be connected as lovud. Obviously, it's not the same. Rava says, you could do the opposite. You could say, well, the Sefer is focusing on four, then the ratio would be able to be Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, even though it focuses on three. And that, my friends, is like I've explained to you before, and I don't know why you can't get this through your heads. The only time Reb Shimon ben Gamliel says that Lovot is four is where it's not on the bottom of the Mechitza, so we don't have the problem of penetration by small animals. But if you're talking about over here, where it's open at the bottom as well, so over here, it's a mechitza shagdiim bokimbo, and we do not say lovod, where animals go right through. Okay, now can we please get back to the main topic over here? What is the din of Poretz Ka'omed? I mean, everything that I bring you, you're able to explain it according to Boshitas, which of course is the whole way that Mishnah and Brises are organized, make sure you can fit in as many different shitas as possible. Okay, let's take a look at this Brisa. This was the Brisa we had earlier where a guy makes a patio with a bunch of windows and doors, and it's basically all open space. What's the halacha over there? So, defanot halal, when you make a patio that has almost, oh, it's mostly doors and it's mostly windows, that's mutter as long as there's not more open space than there is closed space. What? You just contradicted yourself. You said it's mostly doors and windows, meaning empty space. I didn't mean mostly. I meant that you have a lot of ribabam. You have many, many open areas, whether they're open for walking in and out or their windows. It's all okay. That says over here, more omed, not same omed. Anti, Rav Papa, Kaputsky, Rav Papa, Tiyufta the Rav Papa, Tiyufta. Yeah, but we paskin like Rav Papa anyway. What? What do you mean we paskin Tiyufta and Halacha? Yes, yes. This is a Braita. What did our Mishnah say, my friends? Mishum d'daika matznisin kavas. And remember, it said in the Mishnah, lo yehi paratzot yeterot al binyan. No bigger empty parts than there are solid parts. Okay, what is that telling you? That if it is kibinyan, then it is okay. And that means we pasuk like Rav Papa. There's an obviously a machlokas tanoim over here in that braita. Forget about that braita. We pasuk like the Mishnah, like a braita. Sir Richard, you are called upon to perform your capitanial duties. No sound, Sir Richard. No sound.
No sound.
Plug in your microphone. Turn up your
sound. We heard him. We heard him.
No, Sir Richard. All right, sir. At least could you orchestrate it by moving your arms and, you know, doing a lot of things so that it says, if we hear it. Wow, beautiful, just beautiful. Amazing. Okay, that was only kosher, though, because of Lovot. It was a virtual introduction to the Mishnah.
I don't understand. No, there's
other ways that you can make yourself a very... You did hear him. It's so weird. I didn't hear a word.
Yes, we heard him clearly. Something's wrong. With a beautiful tone. It was a very nice tone.
I don't hear anybody. I see. Something is wrong. All right. Yikes. All right. Well, I don't want to waste time on it. All right. There's other ways that you can make a mechitza, obviously. And one of the easiest ways of mechitza is to put up a kind of sukkah wall that people use all the time. Remember those walls where what you do is, I see. It's set to my headphones or something. Okay, what a shame, I missed Richie. So if you have three little wires, one on top of the other, wires aren't gonna do it, as we'll see, because then you'll need four. But if you've got three little bands, one on top of the other, so you can put them, three chavalim, zelam alam izeh, vizelam alam izeh, and as long as you don't have a full three tfachim, they're all gonna be lovot to each other, which gives you nine, right? Let's say we start with a thread. So then you've got nine if they're within three, minus slightly the less than three, which is a mashu. So if you add a wider band so that the three bands are actually a full tefach wide plus slightly more each one of them, so there will be three tefachim plus three mashus, so then you will get a total of 10. So the shear of the chavalim, the thickness of the chavalim, altogether needs to be somewhat more than a tefach to cover the three mashuim. So the total measurement is 10 tfachim. So now that would be a horizontal wall, not a vertical wall. Okay. You could also make a vertical wall by putting in sticks into the ground. So you put in these poles that have sharp bottoms, but there you have to make sure that same thing. You don't have more than three tfachim between one pole and the next, and then the whole thing is considered to be a proper mechitza. But remember, because these mechitzas are mechitzas that are lower class mechitzas, so they are geruim, they are lower class mechitzas, they only allowed you to do this if you're in a caravan. But you can't do it if you just want to do it for yourself personally. So says Rabbi Yehuda. So you need to have at least three people traveling together. The Chachamim say, nah, what's the difference? There's no nafkamina in the people that are there. Once again, we reach an interrelationship between the diurin and the way that the mechitza is made for these diurin. So according to the Chachamim, the only reason we talked about caravans is because that's normally where you're going to need to make something fast before Shabbos, and you're going to make it a very simple type of mechitza. And therefore, you could use it as much as you want. Kol mechitza, whoa. Rabbi Yehuda says, any mechitza that doesn't have both shasi and erev, so it doesn't have both a vertical and a horizontal part, so it's not a cross-linked mechitza, is not a mechitza at all. Mashmah that according to him, you can't even use it in a caravan. But the Chachamim say, no, one of the two, either vertical or horizontal, is perfectly okay, which seems to be merely repetitious of the shita that the Tanakhama said. Amar Rav Amnuna, Amar Rav. You know, we talked about this Omed Meruba Al Haparotz. We talked about it purely in terms of vertical mechitzas, because we were talking in the Mishnah about putting things on the ground, camel, and then a camel a halter and so on and so forth. Those things all stood on the ground. So basically they're vertical. And we were wondering what the din is of Omid Merubah Laparetz or Omid Kiparetz. I want to know, is this an issue when it comes to horizontal walls? I mean, there's nothing in a horizontal wall that I would see as an opening. I mean, it's not really open. So is the question of how much space is on either side of these partitions, is that an issue? Now, don't bring me a riot from the Mishnah. The Mishnah says you could just use a wire. Yeah, but that's Lovud. Remember, Lovud doesn't have anything that's open. But how about if you do have something that's open? But you have big pieces, and then you have a big open piece, and so on. So would that the open part be mevatel, the closed part with all of the issues of avir da'aygis and avir da'aygisa, or questions of oimer merubah laparetz, or not? That's what I want to know. And we will try to work out a raya from the Mishnah tomorrow. So I used up a lot of your time for philosophy, but I hope that it will give you an easier way of holding on to this Masechet and to your learning in general and to your life in general and to your experiences of being a human being in the presence of the Shekhinah as well. So just to remind you again, what we've been talking about is various types of mechitzas. Mechitzas that are not the best, they're called mechitzot ru'uot by Rashi. And the reason that they're not the best would be for two possible reasons. Their construction, such that, for instance, we only have sheti or not erev, or we have erev and not sheti. Or there may be the issue of diurin. How are the mechitzas made? Or what type of diur is this? So would it be, for instance, is it a mechitza hasui la'avir, meaning that it's a place where people may be living, like the tree that's hanging down, but it's a place that they're not really desirous of living in. They're living there because they need to work outdoors. That is also called a not normal type of diur. So that type of thing is limited, remember, to the halacha of the exact amount of space that was available in the Mishkan, in the chotzer of the Mishkan, which was Beit Sa'atayim, 50 by 100, which is 5,000 square amas, and that's a special halacha. Now, there also is another question of how often and under what circumstances were we going to allow you to utilize a second-rate mechitza, mechitza that is gerua, ra'ua, according to Rashi, the use of use. It's not, Gemara doesn't have a particular word that defines it. And there the question is, we've been talking all along over here in the Mishnayos, we've been talking about caravans. And that may be a very special halacha. Dafkin a caravan. It turns out that we have four different shitot about when it is that you're allowed to make a one-directional mechitza. And one-directional mechitza would mean the mechitza is either vertical or horizontal, but doesn't cross. So let's just review once again the Mishnah on Tetzayin Amud Beis. Again, just to remember where we're up to. We were talking about Shlosha Chavalim. And there you are, out, you have very little available to build actual permanent mechitzas. So what you do is you put some poles into the ground, and then you take some strings or some straps, and like people do for sukkahs. So you put three straps, one on top of the other, and that's fine, as long as there's less than three tefachim between each one of them, and as long as you have a total between all of the straps of one tefach to make up for the nine is not enough. You need always 10 tefachim to be a minimal size of mechitza to create a rishus hayochid. Plus, you need to have three mashahus to make up for the difference of the pachot mishlosha, slightly less than shlosha, between each one of them. So then in total, you would have 10, and that would be fine. Or you could just use these poles if you got enough of them. So then you could be makifa bekanim if the poles, after they're banged into the ground, still have 10 tefachim above the ground. And then you would just need to have less than three tefachim between one pole and the next. Okay, now, the important point over here is that here are our four shitas. The Tanakhama did not make any limitations about how you would be able to use these kind of mechitzas. It sounded like you could have as much space as you wanted, and it doesn't matter how many people that you are, and it doesn't matter where you are. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says, well, no, we were only matir this as a shayara. It's only because you're a caravan. But if you're not a caravan, which would mean apparently that you're not on the road and you're also just an individual, even if you are on the road, then that's not going to be mutter. So we're going to see exactly what the differences are. And according to this, the caravan would be at least three people, as we're going to see. But if you don't have three people, you can't use it. Sounds like you can't use it at all. And then the Chachomim seem to repeat themselves, and they say, nope, the only reason we mentioned a Shayara in the previous Mishnah is because, I mean, that's usually the way, the reason that people are stuck, that they're going to make these types of low-class mechitzas. But that doesn't mean it's limited to that, in which case it would be okay even if you had for an individual. And then we have the other amazingly Chomer Pshat, which, according to Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda says, Kol mechitza she'ina shel sheti v'shel erev ve'ina mechitza at all. Oh, gosh. So he seems to be saying, can't use it for anybody. Can't use it for Shayara. Can't use it for Yachid. It's useless. And then we have a repetitive Chachamim. The Chachamim Amru. Doesn't matter. One or the other. Could be either vertical or horizontal. Both are the same. Okay, so now the first thing we want to know is, do we really need to have the complete mechitza closed up? Because when we're using Lavud, that means that essentially the whole thing is shut, right? I mean, it doesn't look shut to us because it's 99% empty space. But in terms of the force field of the wall, it's completely and totally shut. Do we really need it to be completely shut? So we were talking before, remember, up until we got to this mission about the concept of parutz ke'omed, parutz meruba ala omed. But one thing was for sure, if it was omed meruba ala parutz, and you didn't have the on both sides of one of the particular standing poles or parts, you didn't have more avir than you had the actual standing part. So then there would be a different hector completely. Not because it's sealed. It's open. Agreed, it's open. But it's mostly closed if you take the entire circumference into consideration. Does that apply to mostly closed in height? Or is it only mostly closed in circumference? In other words, if you've got the question of your wall that is only made of horizontal pieces, namely it's only made of arev, only the horizontal in terms of a weave, that would be called the arev. So Rav Amnuna wants to know, okay, we understood that Omid Merubah Laparetz Ibishesi, where it's vertical, yes. I want to know, what's the Din Ba'arev? And this is where we ended up yesterday. So, and again, we can't bring a riot from the Mishnah, obviously. The Mishnah is not talking about any open space. There is zero open space in the Gemara. Don't fool yourself just because it's 99% airspace. It isn't open airspace. You're just not seeing the force field. But the Lovud is a force field that's closing it up. I want to know, can you get away without Lovud, as long as you would have Rove? So, says Abaya, okay, I'll bring you a raya. Take a look. Why does our Mishnah say that the only way you can get away with this thing is if you use these chavalim, so you have these straps, and the total width of the straps have to be a tefach, plus enough to close up the mashuim. That way you would have besach hakol, she'akol, asarat fachim. Now, if, in fact, we would be able to be matir based on omed meruba ala paretz, then you wouldn't need to have the way the Mishnah has it. Because, look, isn't it true that any area that's closed with lavud is completely closed? Yeah? Okay. So then let's just take one piece of a little bit less than three. All right. Another piece a little bit less than three. What do we got? We got almost six. 5.99, right? Okay. So then we have rov of a mechitza. So why can't we leave the rest of it empty and then just put up a little string? I mean, I understand. It's mostly going to be closed. You could have a piece of empty space that isn't lavud. Who cares if it isn't lavud? Doesn't need to be lavud if we add rov. So why does the Mishnah demand that? No, the whole thing's got to be lavud. Why does the whole thing have to be lavud? All you need to do is make one space lavud pachos b'shlosha b'chevel mashu, and then make another place that's pachos b'shlosha b'chevel mashu, and then the third place could be anything less than four with a chevel mashu. You don't need lavud at all. But we're only saying four to make a 10 b'sach hakol, right? I don't care where you put the top. Wait a minute. That doesn't make it sounded good Abaya. There's no way to do that. Let me ask you something. Where do you intend to put the piece that is four? Huh? Tell me. Are you going to put it on the bottom? You can't put it on the bottom because remember, if a mechitza, if it's not a real mechitza and it's got a place for gedim bokimbo, So then it's bottle, the mechitza is bottle ipso facto. So it can't be on the bottom because four is big enough for a goat to just jump right through. So forget about that. So that's how the mechitza shabagidim bokim. But if you're going to put it all the way on the top, you've got another problem. Remember, the other problem is ati avir the haigis of avir the haigis of mevatulai. If you have an area that is surrounded on two sides by something that is larger than it, that is avir, we don't look at the entire mechitza. We look at the local problem of having more avir on either side. And in this side, you are for sure going to have problems over here, because basically you've got endless open space on the top, if you put it on top, and then you've got the open space on the other side. So then there's nothing there that is going to be big enough to be closed. All right, so you say, fine, so let me put it in the middle. I put it in the middle, that's fine. So then I'm surrounded, if I have four tvachim in the middle, and then I have one of the solid pieces of three tvachim beneath it, made by Lovett, of course, and one of the solid pieces of three tvachim on top of it. But then the only way that it works, since three is less than four on top and three is less than four on the bottom, the only way that you've got the omed meruba laporitz is by adding the two sides together first. And that, we had, was a big question before. And that would be an omed meruba laporitz mishtei tzadim. And then if the Mishnah had used that, it would have been committing itself to the din. That shmamina omed meruba laporitz mishtei ruchot, that if you've got, by combining it, it would be considered to be amud, and that is something that before we were certainly not willing to commit ourselves to. Or it's a machlokas we showed him over here. What the issue is, maybe it's because of us, yavir mehayis v'agis. But in any event, there's no way, therefore, that Abaya can bring a raya from the Mishnah, because we have very good reasons for avoiding exactly the case that Abaya said would be the case that would answer the problem. Okay. So, but then what was Rav Nuna asking? I didn't understand. I mean, if you can't come up with a case where essentially Eimed Merubah Laporitz would work, so then where's it Nogei Halacha L'maisa? No, so Rav Nuna, there is an explanation. Let me give you an explanation, okay? Where I've got an Eimed Merubah Laporitz. Forget about the Mishnah's cases about strings and stuff like that. Imagine you've got a case like this. You have a bunch of mats, okay? Now, these mats are basically... they're more than seven tvachim high, and you cut out, like on the bottom, three tvachim on the bottom, okay? So now what you've got is basically a tiny little strip at the bottom of the mat that you've left, and then you've got four tvachim and a little bit more on top. That little bit more is to allow the little bit less than three tvachim in the middle. And then you've got less than three tvachim on the bottom. Do I have a picture of this? You want to have somebody tell us the name, number of the picture, please?
It's 121, but it feels inaccurate.
No, it's why it doesn't feel inaccurate. It's beautiful. So then if we take that picture, take those mats, and bang one mat into poles, right, and surround the whole area with mats like that. So what do you end up with? So if you put it less than three tvachim from the ground, you've got the little piece at the bottom of the mat that's right up before three tvachim, then that becomes a lovut, right? And then you've got beneath that, you've got this also, this area that is less than three. Okay, so what would be the din of such a case? That's my question. You've got four tvachim of solid mat on top. You've got the piece in the middle, which is three tvachim, so it's not lovut. And then you've got the bottom piece, which is less than three tvachim, which is lovut. Okay, how much total wall space do you have over here? Four tvachim on top, three tvachim on the bottom, including the little piece on the bottom, which is lovut. Now, can I allow the part in the middle that is not lovut, or do I have a problem? That's what he was asking. So it's a perfectly reasonable question. And therefore, you need to determine whether that is that considered to be a mechitza or not. Rav Ashi says, look, you don't have to get up on all of this. This is very complicated. It's very simple. If he was asking whether you could do omed meruba laparetz, okay, so what's he asking? Omed meruba laparetz would mean that I can effectively disregard the fact that this mechitza allows for gedim bokimbo. Because once I have, I mean, any mechitza, for God's sake, if I have mechitza around a chotzer, I mean, if I've got 10 amos that are open and they're considered to be part of the mechitza, I got an awful lot of goats coming through those 10 amos that are open. I can even have 18-wheelers coming through it. That doesn't destroy the mechitza. So that's basically what he wants to know. If we're talking about that in terms of the horizontal, what would be the vertical? What would be the din in terms of the horizontal? What would be the case? Hang a mechitza and then leave a mechitza 10 tefach. I don't know. It could be 100 feet high. Okay. And then the bottom part of it is not lova to the ground. It's open. But, I mean, the ground is certainly the bottom of the mechitza. So you've got mostly closed mechitza. So essentially what I'm asking you is, what's the din of a hanging wall, right? That's a question that we entertained a couple of times before. And that was the question, says Rav Ashi. He was simply, Rav Nuna was asking, what's the din of a mechitza tluya? Remember we had that question. Remember Rav Tabla asked Rav, if you're in a churva, and the wall, the lower part of the wall has collapsed, and the upper part of the wall is still hanging, which is very common in ruins. So is that considered to be a real mechitza or not? Very straightforward question. What is that dependent on? It's dependent on the shaila of whether if you have oimed meruba ala parutz. The bottom part of the wall is parutz. The upper part of the wall is oimed. It's vertical. No, it's all horizontal. So can I use the horizontal top part to close up the horizontal bottom part, which is in lava? What's wrong with that question? Well, I mean, we know the answer to that question, because when Rav Tabla asked it from Rav, Rav said, remember, we're talking about Venice, living in Venice, then you've got your beautiful porch out over the canal. You want to get your water up into your house on Shabbos. What do you do to be able to draw water from an area that has a din of a carmelite? How do you get it up into your merpeset, which has a din of a rishus hayochid? So we said you put like a bechitza that's hanging from underneath your merpeset. That turns the carmelite, which is the actual canal of Venice, into a rishus hayochid in that area, because the mechitza tluya will be matir, and then everything will be fine. But it's only benogei mayim. It was a special heter that we gave in terms of mayim. But that was a question. Remember, the Gemara asked, well, what about the fish? Aren't the fish considered to be the equivalent of Gedi and Boken, but Nachliel? Your face of constant wonderment and what in the world is going on is extremely disturbing. You're supposed to be engaged, not in constant state of wah, wah, wah. Life is not about wah. It's about direct engagement. Put on a smile. Look at the thing. Somebody actually wrote me yesterday. There's people that disturb me. Can we please put up the video without all the people in them? So don't be disturbing. Look like you're happy. Okay. So we asked before, what about the little fishies? Aren't little fishies like a DM Bokimbo? That's exactly the question. So Rav Nuna wants to know, is it good? No, we're only making kalu shekilu chachamim b'mayim, and not in this case. So that answers Rav Nuna, assuming that Rav Nuna is asking that same question. Anyway, let's get to the Mishnah. So the Mishnah was talking about two possibilities, either straps that go around, which people use for their sukkah all the time, or putting in these poles that they bang into the ground. They're 10 tefachim high, they're within 3 tefachim of each other, and now everything should be okay. So then we got into the machlokas. So is this only a caravan? So Rabbi Yehuda said it's only a caravan. But if it's not in a caravan, what's the din? Useless. You can't use it at all. That's what it sounds like. So in other words, you're telling me that according to Rabbi Yehuda, a caravan, if which means 3 people, you can use this. But if you're a yachid, you can't use it at all. But that's not true. Because we know in a bright, Rabbi Yehuda says, all mechitzas of Shabbos, the type of these all mechitzas, meaning the lower class mechitzas, lo yitiru liyachid, and look what he says over here, lo yitiru liyachid yoter mibeit satayim. Whoa. They just weren't matirit for more than a beit satayim, but it's certainly good for the size of the chotra mishkan, right? So that would mean that actually even Rabbi Yehuda agreed that you can use it, you just can't use it for more than beit satayim. Whereas in the Mishnah, it's mashma that you can't use it at all. They were only matirit if you have 3 people. Well, I mean, No. I mean, we're going to use this. We're going to have the same problem with Yosef Rabbi Yehuda in a minute, okay? And what Rabbi Nachman, or maybe it was Rabbi Bibi Bar Abaya, answered was that when we said that you can't use it, or when Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda said you can't use it, it's not called a mechitza. You mean it's not called a mechitza at all? He meant it's not called a machitza to give the amount of space that you would normally want, that where you were using, that you were enclosing for dira. It does not give you the normal rights of having a machitza. It's as if you're living in your backyard. So it would be considered to be a hook of shalola dira, the equivalent of shalola dira, which means up to Beit Satayim. And that's what it means over here. Lo nitzucha, when we say that's not a wall, we mean that's not a wall, litein lahem kol tzorchan. We say that by Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda in a minute. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda meant. When Rabbi Yehuda said you can't use it unless it's a shayara, he meant you can't use it, litein lahem kol tzorchan, unless it's a shayara. And where did Rabbi Nachman or Rabbi Bibi Barabai, where were they? They were saying the same thing about the same exact question on the next shita in the Mishnah, which was, I'll leave it to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, kol mechitza she'ena shel shesi ve'erev, is not a mechitza, which we took to mean is not a mechitza at all, divrei Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. And we asked on that the same basic question. What? That's not what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says. Because it says in the Braita that Echad Yochid ve'echad Shayara can use a mechitza of straps. Shayara l'chavali. So what's the difference between a Yochid and a Shayara? The difference is that if you're a Yochid, and a Yochid means either a Yochid or two people, meaning less than a Shayara. So a Yochid gets only a Beit Satayim. Two people also only get a Beit Satayim. But if you've got three people, then they become a Shayara, because they're three. And then those three people get six Beit Sah, two per person. So says Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. I mean, this is Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. I thought Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah, you don't get anything if it's a Mechitza that's just Shesi or just Erev. Make up your mind. So how do you explain that? That's going to be in a moment the same explanation that we gave before. And the Chachonim say, no, it doesn't matter. Yochid, Shayara, you get as much as you need. You're not limited to six sa'ah. Take whatever you want, even for an individual. As long as there's not two sa'ah that are left empty. We're going to ask what that means, left empty in what sense. But we'll get back to that in a minute. So meanwhile, we have a contradiction in Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. Did he say a mechitza that doesn't have crossed linkages is not considered to be a mechitza? Or did he? Says the Gemara, yes, he did, but he didn't mean it's not a mechitza at all. He meant it's not a mechitza to be treated like a normal mechitza, to give you whatever size house you want. That's all he was saying. And that was Reb Nachman, Vitem Rabbi Bibaravaya. That's where we got it from to apply that tribute. The lo nitzcha lo liten lahem kol tzorchan, the idea over here is that's not a mechitza, meaning it's not a normal mechitza. So all you get from it is a low class mechitza, a mechitza re'uah, which entitles you only to two beit sah. That's all that he was saying. Anyway, so getting back now, lahalacha. So darash Reb Nachman Mishum Rabbeinu Shmuel, the halacha is a yochid gets two beit satay. Two people get two beit satay. Three people become a shayara and get six beit satay. Okay, so who's he paskening like? Exactly like Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda that we just had in the Braita, right? But that doesn't make any sense. How can you go against the Rabbim and paskin like Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda? So they asked Reb Nachman, what's with you? Shavakta Rabbanan ve'avadatak Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda? I mean, isn't there a halacha that yochid v'rabim, you have to paskin like the Rabbim? Reb Nachman immediately realized he made a mistake. So hadar ukim Reb Nachman amora alei. So Reb Nachman brought another amora, loudspeaker, to be able to say over, gentlemen, Dvarim shamarti lifnechem ta'utein biyadi. My drasha was wrong. Wait, take it back. V'ram kach amru. What the correct psak was is that a yachid gets a beit satayim. Two people get a beit satayim. Whoa, it's still like Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. Hold on a second. All right, but he seems to be sticking to that part of it. But three people are not limited to six sa'ah. Three people are shayara. They get as much as they want. Nobody said that. I mean, that's half this and half that. Ask the Gemara, now what? I don't understand. So now you're paskening. First you started paskening about Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda again, and you said a yochid gets two people get two, and then the difference came with three. Instead of saying what Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda said, that three get six, you said at three, we pop into the psak like the Chachamim, and the Chachamim say once you're a shayara, so then you get everything. But the Chachamim say you always get everything. They don't need a shayara at all. So like what is this like very strange combination of psak? You're saying the Reish is Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda and the Seif is the Rabbanan? Yep. It's exactly what I'm saying. Why? Very simple. Because if you take a look at Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda's Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda's father, if you take a look at Rabbi Yehuda, that's exactly how it balances out. What does Rabbi Yehuda hold when it comes to the din of the Yochid versus the Shayara? So since koi avua b'shitate, basically in the case of one person or two people, Rabbi Yehuda said exactly the same thing. You only get two beitza on. So then that means that Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yehuda are no longer yechidim. This is now a shita that is a das rabim, consisting of the shita of Rabbi Yehuda and consisting of the shita of Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda. So therefore I pass it like that. But b'nogea, the din of the shayara, Rabbi Yehuda does not agree with Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Yehuda, his son. Rabbi Yehuda says, b'shayara dibru, that if once you get a caravan, so then you can have like the Chachamim. You can have as much space as you want. So therefore, it turns out, we don't pass him like the Chachamim, that it doesn't make a difference whether it's a Yochid or a Shayara, because there we have two shitas against it. We have Rabbi Yehuda and we have Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. But we do pass him that once you are a Shayara, that indeed you're able to have as much space as you want. Why? Because there we have the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda against Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda. So that makes everything fine.